Thank you very much for another stimulating presentation. I was interested by the link between our first and final presentations. Perhaps could be seen in the fact that regenerative stem cell treatment is a possible treatment for Alzheimer's, and yet both speakers have also encouraged us to think much more broadly about what is illness, what is treatment, and how do we establish the priorities for government and governance. So that's part of my reflections, but I look forward to hearing what everyone else's reflections are. So we're going to move through to question and answer. I'll ask our two remaining panellists please to take seats over there on the table. And I ask that questions, as before, could you start with your name, organisation, and then a short question, and do please make sure it is a question.
Yes. I'm unemployed, excuse me. I've written down two words, eugenics and euthanasia. What are the trends in terms of bioethics in respect of these two issues, eugenics and euthanasia, you think are relevant to our discussion, please? Thank you.
There's one down there.
These are very, very important topics, and we are constantly addressing them in many different ways, and I think it would fill an afternoon at least to discuss euthanasia. But it has some connections to dementia, of course. Perhaps we can focus on that, and I give the microphone to to Ursula. In Switzerland, we have a discussion about euthanasia, the differentiation between active, passive euthanasia, that somebody can die without going through the whole parkour of what is possible in medicine. It's so much possible in medicine nowadays, and leaving away one of the possibilities nowadays legally counts as passive euthanasia. But it's, for me, a different thing than doing something actively that somebody can die more quickly. And then we have the separation of assisted suicide and euthanasia, which is not it's a legal differentiation which is not understandable for those wishing a good end of their life. For them, it's perhaps not so important whether the doctor gives something to them or they take it themselves and the doctor just helps them. So it's a whole range of issues. But now, Ursula.
I just want to say something with regard to euthanasia. I already mentioned that on one of my slides, the question of end-of-life issues, and I meant euthanasia on that slide. As long as dementia is understood as something that is pain and torture, a good death is always a possibility to end this. And, for example, in Austria, the situation is like that, that the public perception of willingly end a life of a demented person is widely accepted, so to say. Nevertheless, nobody is talking about it, and everybody is complaining about the situation in the Netherlands, where it's done not under the surface, so to say. But in Austria, it works under the surface. Nobody is talking about that, but it's done. There are several possibilities to end a life of a demented person in a ward, and nobody talks about that. So this is, of course, a very important and pressing question with regard to dementia and the end-of-life issues.
Sorry,
what other questions? Okay. Yeah. Any quick comments on that?
That's another big one. Perhaps it has one connection that I can mention to my talk with the stem cells. Nowadays, the PGD, which was also mentioned by the HFEA representative. Here we have, right in the middle of our discussion, the question, what counts as eugenics in a negative way, and what can be acceptable in a society, which is selection. PGD is always selection. You don't accept an embryo because it will have with a certain degree of certainty a certain disease, and you prefer the other embryo who has not this disease. So in principle, it is in a way eugenics. And all the prenatal diagnoses that we have available in society that are increasingly also a burden for the women who are pregnant, who can have a whole parcours again of medical offers, and it's even difficult for them to refuse these offers. I think this is a huge topic. I'm not able to cover it.
Thanks. Lady in red in the back row.
My name is Susan Kerrison, and I don't know. I don't the full relevance. I've just completed a doctoral thesis on the regulation of nursing homes, which essentially was about looking at what old people were, I suppose, within a regulatory structure. But I would question a lot what you said, quite honestly. But not to go on about it, I want to ask you how you think, and I can only talk of the UK, what the strength of your argument is that old age is medicalised, extreme old age, because the reality is, in the UK and many other countries, is that the access of very old people to medical care is they don't have access. That's the reality. So it's always presumed and always taken that there is a medicalisation of old age. But if you actually look at it as the evidence, you find that that is quite the contrary. I mean, the other thing that I think that you need to think about is that the demographic transition occurred some time ago. Extreme old age has just become a problem. Changes in developed societies actually happened over the last 60, 50 years. And you need to think about why old age now is a problem. In the past, it's not been perceived that, because the main changes happened before.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a typical problem. I'm sorry, I forgot to define what I mean with medicalization, because I'm sorry for that. I don't mean, with medicalization, I don't mean access to drugs or use of drugs. What I mean, and it's not, I didn't define this term, this biomedicalization or medicalization is a term used in political science and in sociology. What is meant with that term is that it is not understood as a normal part of aging, but is understood as an illness or a disability or an impairment. This is meant by that. So, and there are a lot of, for example, with regard to Alzheimer's disease, there are a lot of researchers, neurologists or psychiatrists, who say this is not a disease. The question is, what is a disease then, and what does it mean to be labeled as having a disease? And this was the problem I wanted to address. You're absolutely right. The problem is that old persons or demented persons don't get any drugs, not only because of the fact that NICE recommendations said don't give them drugs in certain stage of dementia for Alzheimer's disease, for example. But nevertheless, it's a question about what is perceived as something normal and not normal. This was what I meant with medicalization.
Thank you. Front row, please. Gentleman with the turquoise tie.
Peter Hook, retired chemistry lecturer, godbrother, I guess. My question is essentially to Christoph, if I can call you that. Apologies for being late, by the way. The impression I got from the Germany-UK range is floundering, one word, floundering. Such a wide range of issues, and that's followed all the way through, really. Of course, the background issue to this, of course, is what is man? And in one sense, the Almighty created this headache, so he's got to sort it out. But pointing to the mechanistic diagrams that you've got about all these things splitting up in an blastocyst and all the rest of it, would your interpretation and analysis of those things be any different if you were talking about an animal compared to the similar processes of the human being? Would you distinguish anything between an animal and a man in that process at a mechanistic level in the area of conception and cell development?
The mechanistic level is a topic for the biologists, and they do differentiate between humans and animals, because we are just one species of animals for biologists. So there are obvious differences, not the same biomolecules there. But your question was a cultural question or an ethical question, as you pose it, and the Almighty has. is there a difference between a human embryo and an animal embryo on the level of ethics? I understood you this way.
Well, I was looking at the hard science view on it. Can you look down the microscope and say, well, that's the sort of process that occurs in the human embryo and all that stuff. That's a mechanism that happens in an animal, and look, there's a difference. Is that there?
Yeah, it's there. If you look closely enough, under the microscope, just this magnification, as the pictures of Helen Chadwick were, you perhaps do not perceive differences between a mouse and a human embryo, the first patterns of division until gastrulation and the later stages of fetal development, they are quite the same. So they are sort of universal in evolution.
I think we've done that question. Can I just transfer it slightly to you, Ursula, and say, in the context of dementia, do you think that the idea of what it is to be human is changing?
Yes, I do think so, because it's not only about the beginning of life, but also the question of the whole life course. How is life understood within the life course, and then, of course, at the end of life? And I think, as long as we understand this something, as long as we don't understand that it is a fact that our society is changing in a demographic way and that we are getting older, I think it has a tremendous impact on how to identify oneself as an old person, and also how to understand human life. And not only the question of human dignity and other ethical questions, but the very important basic question of what is human life and what it means to be alive.
Lady with the green check jacket.
Yes, thank you. I'm afraid I have a somewhat rude question. Because, social science, outside of social science, sometimes people are skeptical as to whether it actually adds something. And you both talked about this magical word governance as distinct from government. But governance seems to be this wonderful self-organizing thing that just sort of magically appears. And couldn't your promotion of this idea of governance be an excellent excuse for governments to wash their hands of responsibility and say it's all self-organizing, we can't possibly control it?
Thank you.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This is not a rude question. This is exactly what's going on in political sciences at the moment. That first of all, this concept was introduced and everybody said, well, there is something discernible, or you can detect this change, this shift from government to governance. Obviously, something is changing. Therefore, I mentioned it on my slide. But nevertheless, you're absolutely right. It could be an excuse. And what I mentioned with regard to Alzheimer's Disease International, it's interesting. I said it's interesting that they refer again to the governmental practices, probably because they realized that it's not possible to introduce these new spaces. And I think the concept of governance it's sometimes a kind of science fiction in some areas. I absolutely agree. But nevertheless, I insist on saying that something is changing, but there are very small steps discernible. Yeah, but you're right.
Okay.
For me, it's still a question. Governance can be looked at in so many different ways. Is it a normative concept? A good idea how we could transform our political decision-making procedures? Or is it an analytical concept? How can we compare different institutional processes, or even on the country level, different political systems? And on each level, very interesting questions can be posed. And I think we didn't really get to an agreement yet about the core definition of the word governance. So the question is, I think, a good one.
May I add something? I just want to add something with regard to the question of self-governance, because I think you have mentioned this in this, the question of autonomy, and that not the majority should act upon the minority. The problem is if you look on an individual, for example, you do a genetic test or you want to participate in genetic screening, for example, or don't want to. So I lost my thought of train of thoughts. The question is, if an autonomous decision is a decision done by you in an autonomous way, because you're always situated in a certain societal context, and therefore, if somebody says, for example, prenatal diagnosis, if somebody says, well, you have to do this because a disabled child is very expensive for society, then probably a woman will do the test. So this is always the question, how empowering the concept of governance really is.
Thank you. Okay, we've got, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to ask a question which links stem cells and Alzheimer's, which is, Alzheimer's has been used as one of the reasons why we need to have embryonic stem cell research, particularly at the Alzheimer's of Ronald Reagan was used in this way as a key challenge which demanded such, we do so many things, it was so extreme that we have even embryonic stem cell research. And yet when we have people who have Alzheimer's and we have a drug for them, we say, oh, it's too expensive, we won't give it to them. So in one way, sometimes the disease is something which is such an overpowering reason for doing something, and then people who have it, suddenly they don't have the same status, perhaps because of qualities or other reasons. So we have this odd status of Alzheimer's patients. Either they demand it or they don't deserve it. So could you try and tease out the paradox for me of why it is that Alzheimer's either are the most deserving or least deserving people?
Just a caution. I'm very skeptical about these announcements that stem cell research will lead to therapies for Alzheimer. Even it could be that Alzheimer is the worst of all examples for stem cell, possible stem cell therapies. And we really don't know at this stage of development, we don't know what diseases possible or potential stem cell therapies can be good for. And I think it's a political thing that certain researchers wanted to gain some credits by early announcement that we have then in 10 or 15 years something against Alzheimer's. I think this is really dangerous. I don't believe in the Alzheimer cure, the soon stem cell Alzheimer cure.
But in that case, I don't think that it makes any difference if the cure would work or not. It's the discussion about the thing, and therefore I totally agree. I think the paradox may be arise out of the situation that there are a lot of actors now involved in governing dementia or Alzheimer's disease in that particular case. You said about the least and the most serving people. I think this is a kind of a coalition of argumentation, but they have very different approaches why they are interested in that. On the one side, you have the research interests. They are interested in doing this research, and it does not necessarily has to do anything with the person affected with dementia in the end. Because I did a lot of participant observation in dementia congresses, Alzheimer's disease congresses, and usually they don't talk about they are talking about objects and not even about subjects, not even about persons they want to heal. So this is the one thing, the research interest. Then you have the pharmaceutical industry, of course, that is interested in developing new drugs or developing new possibilities to treat and to cure Alzheimer's disease. And then you have, of course, also, and this is interesting, the patient organization's interests. And what they are doing is they are absolutely agreeing with the research interests. They want to get the possibility for funding, and therefore they are saying Alzheimer's disease is a disease and nothing normal, because they want the funding for the research interest. And on the others, this is so to say the coalition on the most deserving people's side, and the least deserving people's side are the regulatory interests in the end that say it's too expensive. And this, I think, this is the paradoxic situation, but I can't give you any, at the moment, any idea how to deal with that and how to cope with that situation.
Okay, we're going to do two more questions, and then we're going to call us today. It's the two hands I'd seen at that point, so we've got one here.
Yes, this will be just a very, very quick question, so we might be able to fit three.
Thanks.
But anyway, it's a question about the very striking images that you showed at the start of your talk, the artwork. And I hope this isn't too flippant a question, but when we see films, particularly natural history films, or adverts particularly, showing animals, say, performing, you see a little disclaimer, no animals were hurt during the production of this short film. I wonder if there was the same kind of qualification and kind of caveat with this artwork. Did they say that no embryos were harmed during the production of this artwork?
As far as I know, she used embryos that were already there and would have been discarded. So she asked the parents, can I take a photo of them? So she didn't stimulate parents to donate embryos for artistic use or something like that.
Yes, please.
That's as far as I could get the information from the catalogue where I got the photographs from. Yes, I think you're right. I perceive that also this way. The only paradigm that can be put out of force with this genetic manipulation can be the potentiality. And other ways of justifying a moral value of the embryo on a certain level must not be embryo equal person, but can also be an embryo has a certain embryonic dignity or something that is important for us more than just cells or more than just a petri dish, but perhaps not yet a person. I think this will not be touched by this proposal of altered nuclear transfer, and it's still in the discussion.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We are shortly just going to move through into drinks, but I'd like to ask you first to look in your packs for your evaluation forms. I encourage you please to fill those in and put them on that table by the door before you leave. Thank you once again to our speakers for their very thoughtful, stimulating presentations.